The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're doing something a little different. We're not just looking at a story. We're kind of getting the blueprints for, well, all stories. The instruction manual for the storytelling machine itself.
That's a great way to put it, yeah. We're diving into Mika Bell's work, specifically her framework for narrative analysis. And our goal, really, is to help you, the listener, shift gears, to go from just passively taking in plots to becoming a more critical interpreter, someone who can actually see the deliberate strategic choices that are happening behind the scenes in every film, novel, news report, even like a political speech you hear.
Right, because we all have that reaction, don't we? Oh, I love that movie, or that book just didn't work for me. But we want to move beyond that gut feeling, that subjective take, and start using a more, I guess, rigorous toolkit, a vocabulary to analyze how these stories create meaning. If they're design things, we need the tools to see the design, the engineering under the surface.
And Mika Bell, especially in her book Narratology, Introduction to the Theory of Narrative, gives us precisely that vocabulary. What's really fascinating about Bell, I think, is her background. She wasn't just a literary theorist.
Whoa.
No, she drew from visual arts, feminist critique, a whole range of fields. And that makes her framework incredibly adaptable, portable, you could say. It works just as well for a 19th century novel as it does for a modern video game or even like performance art.
So it's like a universal translator for stories almost.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah.
The core promise, the real aha moment Bell offers is this. Once you learn to separate what happens in a story from how it's told and through what medium, you unlock this much deeper understanding. You see the structure and often the ideology that the creator is subtly weaving in.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Let's unpack that. What's the basic architecture she lays out?
Okay, so fundamentally, she breaks down any narrative into three distinct layers. Think of them as levels. They are fabula, story, and text.
Fabula, story, text. Got it. Let's start with the first one, tabula. What's that?
The fabula. Think of it as the raw material. It's the chronological, logical sequence of events as they happened, or as they would have happened if you just lined everything up in order, start to finish. No interpretation, no shaping, just the bare facts.
Like a security camera recording, maybe? Just the events unfolding in real time?
That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Or if we think about, say, a crime story, the fabula is everything that actually occurred that night. From point A to point B to point C, chronologically, no flashbacks, no suspenseful reveals, just the sequence, the raw data.
Okay, makes sense. Raw data. Then what's the story layer?
The story. This is where the artistry or, you know, the manipulation really comes in. The story is the specific way those raw fabula events are selected, arranged, shaped, and presented. It's the plot, essentially.
So back to the crime example.
Right. The story isn't just the sequence of events. It's maybe the detective's reconstruction of the crime. They might start with finding the body, dramatic opening, then flash back to show motive, then jump forward to the investigation.
Uh-huh. So they're picking and choosing from the fabula, reordering it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Selecting what to emphasize, what to downplay, what order to reveal things in. That's the story layer. It's all about structure and arrangement to create a specific effect on the audience.
Okay. Fabula is the raw chronology. Story is the arranged plot. What's the final layer? Text.
The text is the actual thing we encounter, the concrete artifact. Yeah. It's the physical book with its specific sentences and chapters.
Yeah.
It's the film with its camera shots and editing. It's the podcast episode you're listening to right now. It's the medium that delivers the story.
Got it. So the words, the images, the sounds.
Precisely. And here's the crucial insight, the thing Bell really hammers home. We, as the audience, never get direct access to the pure fabula. We can't. We only ever experience the text.
Right. We read the book, we watch the film.
And from that text, we perceive the story the way things are arranged. And only from that story can we try to infer or reconstruct the original fabula.
Ah, okay. So the choices made in the story and text layers mediate our understanding of the raw events.
Absolutely. Every time the story jumps in time or the text uses a particular word or a film uses a close-up shot, those conscious choices, they're shaping how you perceive the underlying fabula. They're controlling your access.
Speaking of control and access, this seems like a good point to dive into some of the specific tools Bell gives us for analyzing that text layer, right? Because how the information is presented is key. I know she makes a big deal about separating narration and focalization.
Yes. This is so important and often gets mixed up. Narration is, relatively speaking, the simpler question. Who speaks? Who is telling the story?
Like, is it a first-person narrator using I, or a third-person narrator who seems outside the story?
Exactly. That's narration. We identify the narrator, the voice. But Bell's really significant contribution here is isolating focalization. The question for focalization is, who sees? Whose perspective or consciousness is filtering the information we receive in the story?
Who sees? Okay, why is that different from who speaks? Don't they usually go together?
They can, but they absolutely don't have to, and separating them is incredibly revealing. Think about this. You could have an external third-person narrator, someone who isn't a character, just telling the story.
Okay.
But the entire story, or large parts of it, might be focalized through one specific character. This is called internal focalization.
Wait, run that by me again? External narrator, but internal focalizer.
Yeah. So the voice telling the story isn't the character's voice. It's, he walked down the street, he saw the house, third person. But the perception, everything we learn, is limited to what that character sees, thinks, feels, and knows. We're essentially locked inside their head or standing right behind their eyes, even though the narrator is technically external.
Okay. So we only get, say, the paranoid neighbor's view of things, even if the narrator isn't the neighbor.
Precisely. The narrator might describe the neighbor peering through the blinds, but the content of what's described is filtered through the neighbor's suspicion. The man across the street moved furtively, his eyes darting around. We only get the neighbor's potentially unreliable interpretation. We don't get objective reality, nor do we get what the man across the street is actually thinking.
Wow, okay, that is a powerful technique
for
creating suspense or making us question what's real.
Definitely. And then you have the opposite, which Ball calls external focalization. This is more like your security camera analogy from earlier.
How so?
With external focalization, the narrator tells us what happens, what people say, what they do, but gives us absolutely no access to anyone's internal thoughts or feelings. We see actions and hear dialogue, but we have to infer the motives and emotions ourselves. It creates distance, objectivity, sometimes even a sense of mystery.
Like watching people through a window, almost.
Exactly. And then, of course, there's the traditional zero focalization. This is your classic omniscient narrator.
The all-knowing one.
Right. The focalizer isn't limited at all. They can dip into any character's head, know the past, hint at the future, comment on the action. Total access.
So narration is who speaks. Focalization is who sees. And the choice of focalizer, that sounds like a major strategic decision for any storyteller.
It's arguably one of the most significant ideological choices a creator makes. Think about a news report about a conflict. If the entire report, even if narrated objectively, consistently focalizes through the experiences of civilians on one side,
your sympathies are immediately guided towards them.
Without question. Even if the narrator claims neutrality, the focalization choice has already positioned you emotionally. It's incredibly powerful and often invisible if you're not looking for it.
That's a huge takeaway. Okay, let's shift back a bit to the story layer, the arrangement of events. You mentioned Baal analyzes how time is manipulated. What are the key concepts there?
She looks at time in terms of sequence and rhythm. Sequence is pretty straightforward. It's about messing with the chronological order of the fabula.
Like flashbacks and flash forward.
Exactly. Baal uses more technical terms, though, which are helpful for analysis. A flashback is analepsis, jumping back in time. And a flash forward is prolepsis, jumping ahead.
Why the fancy terms? Is it just academic jargon?
Well, partly it's about precision, but using the terms also forces you to see these not just as, you know, cool cinematic tricks, but as deliberate structural choices.
Mm.
When a film starts with a character's death, that's prolepsis, and then jumps to 2 weeks earlier.
Right.
That resequencing isn't random. It's designed to create suspense, irony, make you ask, how did we get here? If they had just told it chronologically, following the fabula, the impact might be completely different. Less engaging, maybe.
Okay, so sequence is about order. What about rhythm?
Rhythm is about pacing. It's the relationship between how long an event actually takes in the fabula versus how much space, how many words, how much screen time is dedicated to it in the text.
Ah, like stretching out a moment or skipping over years.
Precisely. A common technique is summary. The text might say, the next 5 years were uneventful. That covers a huge chunk of fabula time in just a few words. It speeds things up.
Right.
The opposite is stretch. This is where an event that might take only seconds in the fabula, like a character hesitating before picking up a phone, gets pages and pages of internal monologue in the text.
Building tension, dwelling on the significance of the moment.
Exactly. Stretching slows down time, forcing you to experience the character's deliberation or the intensity of the action. So manipulating sequence and rhythm are key ways the story layer shapes our experience.
Makes sense. Before we move on to why this all matters, you mentioned one more distinction Bell makes, something about actors and characters.
Yes, another useful analytical separation. Bell distinguishes between actors and characters. An actor is the structural role or function within the narrative's logic. Think archetypes. Mm-hmm. The hero, the villain, the helper, the object of the quest.
Okay, like the job title in the story.
Sort of, yeah. It's about the function they serve in moving the plot forward. The character, on the other hand, is the specific individual who fills that actor role. They have the unique psychology, the backstory, the specific traits, the name.
So why pull those apart?
Because analyzing the actor level lets you see the deep structure. You can compare this story to thousands of others using the same underlying functions. It reveals the universal patterns, the narrative grammar. Analyzing the character level shows you the specifics, the cultural nuances, the psychological depth, how this particular story fills that ancient structure in a unique way.
So you could have the actor hero, but the character filling that role could be anything from a shining knight to a really flawed anti-hero.
Exactly. Seeing both levels gives you a much richer understanding of what the story is doing, both structurally and thematically.
Okay, this is a lot. We've got fabula, story, text. You've got narration versus vocalization, sequence and rhythm for time, actors versus characters. It's a really comprehensive toolkit. But let's get to the so what factor. For someone just reading the news, watching Netflix, whatever, why should they care about analepsis or zero vocalization?
That's the crucial question, isn't it? They should care because fundamentally, narrative is never neutral. It's never innocent. It's always, consciously or unconsciously, a construction, often an ideological construction.
Meaning it's trying to persuade us of something.
Or at least shape our understanding, our sympathies, our view of the world. Recognizing these structural choices, what to include from the fabula, how to sequence the story, whose perspective to focalize through in the text empowers you, you move from just feeling the effects of the story to understanding how and why you're being made to feel that way. You see the strings.
Okay, let's make that concrete. How could you apply this to, say, media literacy and reading the news?
Great example. Okay, pick up a news article about, I don't know, a complex international situation. First, ask, who's the narrator? Usually the journalist or the publication, okay? But then, crucially, who is the focalizer?
Where is the perspective coming from?
Right. Is the reporting mainly focalized through official government sources, through eyewitness accounts from one specific group, through expert analysts with a known viewpoint? Recognizing the focalizer immediately tells you whose lens you're being given. Is it broad, offering multiple perspectives, closer to zero focalization maybe? Or is it tightly focused, potentially biased, internal focalization through sources?
And what about the sequence, the story arrangement?
Huge. Look at how the story is structured. Mm-hmm. Does the headline in the first paragraph grab you with the most dramatic, maybe alarming outcome? Like market plummets amid crisis fears. That's often polepsis or starting a media's rest.
Grabbing attention.
Yes. But it also frames your emotional response before you get the context, the buildup, the chronological fabula, which might be buried paragraphs down. Understanding that sequence choice helps you see how your reaction is being engineered. It helps identify potential bias or slant in the construction.
That's really practical. What about something more personal, like interpersonal communication?
Absolutely applicable. Think about any argument or conflict you've had. Usually two people walk away with completely different versions of what happened, right? Two different stories.
Definitely. Happens all the time.
Well, Bayle's framework helps explain why. Both people experience the same basic sequence of events, the shared fabula. But in retelling it, each person constructs their own story. They select certain moments, emphasize certain words, arrange the sequence to fit their feelings or justify their actions.
So my story highlights how they were unfair, and their story highlights how I was insensitive.
Precisely. And look at the rhythm. Maybe one person spends ages dwelling on a single hurtful comment, a massive stretch in their narrative, while quickly summarizing or omitting their own contribution to the conflict. A summary. Applying narratology here isn't about figuring out whose story is true. It's about trying to reconstruct the likely fabula and then analyzing how each person's emotions and biases led them to shape their particular story. Seeing how they constructed their narrative can foster incredible empathy. It shifts from blame to understanding perspective.
That actually feels really profound, moving from who's right to Why do we see it differently? Okay, one more application. What about people who actually create narratives? Writers, filmmakers, marketers?
For creators, this framework is gold. It moves narrative choices from just pure gut feeling or intuition, which is valuable, of course, to conscious strategic design.
So instead of just thinking a flashback might be cool here,
you'd think, okay, I need to reveal this backstory element to increase sympathy for the character before they make this morally gray decision. So I'll strategically deploy an analepsis here, focalized through their childhood memory. Or I want to create immediate intrigue. I'll use prolepsis and show the aftermath in the opening scene.
Yeah.
It gives you precision tools to achieve specific effects.
Right. It becomes deliberate engineering rather than just throwing things at the wall.
Exactly. You understand the mechanics you're using.
We've covered so much ground. It feels like the core takeaway is this powerful idea. Stories aren't magic, they're machines. Intricately built machines. And Mika Ball, with fabulous story, text, and especially that narration focalization split, gives us the vocabulary to see how they're built, to see the structure underneath.
Absolutely. And I think the most liberating part of it is realizing that understanding how a story is told, the techniques, the choices, the structure, is just as important, maybe even more important sometimes, than just understanding what it's about. It's like gaining literacy. It empowers you as a reader, as a viewer, as a thinker.
It stops you from just being passively swept along by the narrative current. Okay, so we've learned how to use these tools to critically analyze the stories all around us, in media, in relationships, in art. Now, for our final provocative thought for you, the listener, to chew on.
Mm-hmm.
We all tell stories about ourselves, right? Our identity, our past, our goals.
Mm-hmm.
It's a narrative we construct. What if you consciously applied some of Baal's techniques to your own life story?
Ooh, interesting. How do you mean?
Well, what if you tried changing the focalization? Like telling the story of a past mistake, not through your own critical internal voice, but focalizing it through the perspective of someone who loves you unconditionally. Or what if you resequenced events, took a failure from your past and framed it not as an ending, but as a necessary prolepsis, a flash forward that actually enabled a success you're experiencing now?
Wow.
Could consciously manipulating the way you tell your own story actually change the story itself? Change how you feel about it, and maybe even change your future behavior.
That's That's definitely a story worth trying to rewrite.
Yeah.
Powerful thought to end on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.